afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining me on Hashtag No Limits. I am your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people whose society places limits upon but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better example than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. For those who don't know, the butterfly literally dissolves into its cells, and then it reforms into the butterfly. As if that's not difficult enough, while it's in the cocoon, it has to struggle in order for its wings to be strong enough in order for it to fly when it eventually gets out of the cocoon. And if we help it too much, we're actually doing it damage, which is mind-boggling to me. But that is truly the case. And just like that is not an easy task, neither is busting through the limits that society places upon a person. And today, I have the privilege to bring to you two people who have created an entire system to help students understand their world around them and their emotions and how to express them. And so I'm very excited to talk more with Stephanie Cantu and Kristen Farah of Happy Spots. Welcome, ladies. Thank you for joining me.
Hi.
Thank you, Shelley.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. So we met a few months ago at a conference where it was all for teachers. And so in this program that you have, I'm sure that it is mostly for teachers, but, and I'm probably getting ahead of myself here and I apologize. Is this something that parents can utilize with their children too?
Absolutely. So there's a few different versions of the practice, and one's more specifically for at-home use. We have a professional one and then a specific school one. So the awesome. Practice itself is very similar, but it's more of the support and the directions that we provide are more tailored for the audience. So, you know, helping parents understand what we're doing, why, and then also, you know, giving teachers lesson plans, specific directions to make the most out of the practice.
Perfect. All right. So now let's back up a little bit, because like I said, I kind of jumped ahead. Tell us about yourselves and tell us how this developed, why you feel it's so important, and how it all works.
So Kristen is a current teacher and I am a former teacher. And so we both have, you know, a multitude of experience working with children. I have a special education background and I experienced, you know, pretty difficult anxiety myself throughout my life. And it led me to specific visualization, mindfulness, and meditation practices that were incredibly effective that I didn't find until I was an adult. And what it brought me to, this all started at the beginning of the pandemic, realizing that kids need something accessible to help them to realize really the control they have over their own mind and their own emotions that they're allowing to kind of drive their day. And so I took some of the practices that I learned and figured out, well, how can I, you know, use some of these things that I know work and, but make them more kid friendly. So that's really where Happy Spots came about, is making meditation fun and effective for kids. So it's, you know, it's a practice that, you know, utilizes all learning modalities, welcomes movement and imagination, is very customizable with, you know, the end goal being we want to make mindfulness and meditation accessible to all kids because of the extreme benefits that can be achieved if these practices are implemented consistently in a routine format.
And a little bit about my story too. So I'm still currently in a public school teaching third grade. And Stephanie had come to me about a year and a half ago and, you know, talking to me a little bit about Happy Spots and, you know, what she was working towards with the practice. And her and I started talking about how we felt that a lot of schools didn't really have either things implemented for kids To help with their social and emotional needs, or that what was being implemented didn't really provide them with like a practical practice that then they can walk away with it later, you know, down the road, mm-hmm. at home, they get into situations. And, you know, a lot of what we have at school is a lot of content that gets talked at kids, but then that practicing isn't reality for them. Mm-hmm. They hear it, but it doesn't become their reality.
Yeah.
So I said, I wonder if I could take this idea and start creating some lessons that teachers could use, like very easy step-by-step lessons. And so that's really where I ended up stepping in and started working towards the school side of the practice, where Stephanie was kind of working with more therapists initially in the beginning. She had some therapists that she was working with. And then I started the development of the school practice. So now I actually have a manual, you know, that'll guide teachers through step-by-steps. There's a handful of lessons in it. It's not anything that's, you know, overly complicated or anything that would say, oh my gosh, this is just another thing. It's kind of one of those things that once you learn it, you know it, but then you as the classroom teacher, like any classroom teacher, you're going to customize things to fit your own needs within that classroom setting. So it's not necessarily meant to be, oh, I have to read this script, you know, in a play-by-play-by. It's you're going to use this practice in your classroom to help at moments when you feel like, oh my gosh, what's happening in here? I really do need help in my classroom.
The kids need a reset.
They need a reset. They need something right now because they're not available for learning. And I started to notice that so many students were not available for learning, whether they weren't available for learning at the very start of the day, somewhere midday, or they fall apart at the end of the day. But without teachers taking a step back and say, well, I can keep teaching this lesson, but nothing is going to come from it unless I take that moment to stop right now, spend 10 minutes in this practice that can completely reset a kid's intentions, their mindset, their whole framework can be addressed in a 15 minutes that it might take. Or you're going to reteach that lesson the next day. So that's kind of, you know, like my story and how we ended up meshing together. Mm-hmm. And we've been best friends since we were 5 years old. And
oh, wow.
Yep. We've known each other since kindergarten, and we just cannot get rid of each other.
Nope.
And now you know, she still has another career and I still have another career. And this is our future career where we saw that our paths have finally like emerged into this wonderful thing. And we're in line with each other and feel like we really do have something very unique to offer. Whether it's being offered at home to parents that they can do this with their, you know, with their children, or whether it's for a classroom setting, or whether it's in a therapy setting.
And I would say one of the things that makes this really unique, we have to go back to is, you know, no one's going to argue mindfulness and meditation is beneficial. It's beneficial for anybody that uses it consistently, but kids need routine. So, and the thing about mindfulness is it can be very, you know, unstructured and fluffy where, you know, oh, go to this website, listen to this lovely meditation or this visualization, where it doesn't become routine, where a kiddo, when they're in a hard spot and they do need help coming down or reframing where they're at right now, they're not going to go to, let me go to that YouTube meditation and listen to it. They need right. to have like a routine, like, oh, you know, I'm going to go do my practice. So that's what we're getting at here, is that this is a routine that kids can go to. They can go to start off their day. It's 10 minutes. They can wrap up their day if they're feeling amped up, not tired. You do the happy spots practice. And I guarantee They will be yawning by the end and just be like, not because they're bored, but it literally just calms the nervous system. It gets right into that amygdala, that part in our brain that gets really heightened, especially if we're anxious about something, and just kind of takes it all down. And it, the biggest thing is it helps kiddos realize the power of their own mind, the power that they have. They do the work, they make the shift. And our kids, you know, kids and adults alike sometimes get stuck in that mindset of feeling like somebody else needs to fix them, you know, like this is wrong with me and I need someone to fix me. And what's the most powerful about this practice is, yes, there's material. Yes, there's a framework, but the kids are making the shift themselves. So that mm-hmm. is empowering, really, is when they realize, you know, the control they have really over their well-being and what emotions define them.
Yeah, that is so very true that I don't think oftentimes our kids realize how much control they have mm-hmm. until somebody goes and takes the time to explain it to them. Like, nobody is making you feel this way. You mm-hmm. have the ability to change how you react to a situation or how you accept or don't accept, you know, what's happening around you. You've mentioned the words mindfulness and meditation multiple times. Mm-hmm. And you did kind of talk about the, you know, and so I would like for you to describe or define what those two words mean within the context of what you do, because I think people have lots of different definitions for those two words. And so just to make sure that we're all on the same page with exactly what you guys think of as the definitions for mm-hmm. those words.
And it's such a broad term, so I'm glad you're asking, because what we've developed is not meditation like most people are familiar with. You're not sitting, you're not still, there's movement, there's imagination. So to us, meditation is anywhere, like, is when you are calming everything down, right? You're almost like, it's like a reset opportunity. It's where you are meditating, you are focusing your attention on where you want to go, not where you are. So you might be stuck here when you first start off, but meditation to us is when you can take your mind and finish where you want to be, with the mindset and the emotions of something that's more supportive, to go, you know, where you want to go. And that's kind of what we're looking at here. So, and it really does encompass a lot of different practices. So Happy Spots, it is an active practice. It incorporates movement, and imagination. But the cornerstone is that, you know, it's really taking you, you know, from one area of your mind to, you know, another that's a happier place, and you get to direct it.
I also think too, like with meditation, the common factor too between all forms of meditation is that tapping into the power of the brain, right? Mm-hmm. So we know that when we are in a meditative state, our entire, you know, mindset can actually be shifted. So whether, depending on how good you are at meditating, you know, per se, some people can go so far into meditation that they essentially feel that they are in that space that their mind has taken them to. And they've lost sense of, I might be sitting in a chair, but my brain doesn't recognize that I'm sitting in this chair. Mm-hmm. And so we know that, like with meditation, like I was saying, that the brain is still, you know, going through this experience. So the one thing that I teach my kids in the classroom about meditation is that, you know, I always use the analogy with them about playing sports. And I ask them this question: do you think that a professional football player or a professional soccer player, you know, takes 6 months off in the year and that they don't practice? Do you think that they take 5 days off and don't practice? Or do you think that a professional athlete practices their craft in some way every day, whether that's they're working out, they're exercising, they're training, they're working on, you know, they're throwing, they're catching, their feet work, drills, they're doing something learning, studying, reading, watching video footage back. They do stuff all the time for their craft to practice it. And I explained that it's the same way with meditation too. Like, in order to get better at that, we have to exercise that brain muscle. So we really do need to practice that skill every day in the class. And so that's what we're doing right now in my classroom. We do some form of meditation. The only difference that I kind of feel like with mindfulness is that maybe with a mindfulness exercise, it could be a handful of questions. Sometimes I like will draw out some senses or something, you know, like we might imagine, you know, a giant cloud right now in the sky, and close our eyes and let's like talk about how that might feel. And it's just kind of getting kids to fall into that moment. Mm-hmm. So when you're mindful, is a moment where meditation can kind of really pull you. You can kind of drift off into it for a lot longer. And mindfulness, I feel like, is a little bit more about just
in
like
the moment.
The moment. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes we have to do moment exercises, you know, like right now we need to like do something very quickly just to like stop, whether it's lights off and some music goes on and let's think right now about what we're hearing, and that might be it. Mm-hmm. But to go through the actual happy spots practice is a little bit different because it's structured, which students need structure. Mm-hmm. And it's the same routine. It's not just today we're going to imagine we're on a cloud, or we're going to listen to some music and we're going to reflect on our senses here. This one, it's the same rotation, the same practice every day, which is that, like, you know, learning how to become like good meditators. We're building that power in our brain. And I always say your brain's growing. Your brain is growing. It's getting stronger every time we practice. And even just yesterday in class, I had some kids that like have a very hard time with self-control. Some of my IEP friends that have a very hard time with, you know, safe body this year. And if I can get them to, you know, absorb the practice in that time that we're in it, like I have seen the shoulders relax, you know, the wiggly of the feet and the hands that, you know, the hands that are just going all the time, all of a sudden kind of, it's like caving into it. Mm-hmm. And I give my students the flexibility. You do what your body needs. So you can either sit, you can stand. But like we all wear these really cool happy spot sunglasses in the classroom, and they probably think that's the best part because they get to put out their shoes, you know, and it's fun. And there's little happy spots guys on the lenses and stuff, and they'll spread out and we can go for it.
And that's what we're trying to do, making like, this fun. Because I think in the past, there's just this misconception that, oh, you know, that's boring or that's just for adults. We're trying to make this really fun for kids from a young age and make it accessible to really everybody so that they really want to, you know, practice this, you know, as in some form, you know, to kind of, it's like the gateway so that they take this type of practice with them throughout their lives so that they really can be unlimited. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, our goal is. And Kristen touched upon something with the senses, and I want to kind of hone in on that for a minute because it's very important, and it's something that makes it very accessible for all kids is utilizing our senses. And there's a reason for that. When the sensory piece is we integrate it in the program. But it's important because when we use our senses and combine it with an elevated emotion, so let's say we're, you know, even visualizing something using all of our senses and compare it with, you know, if we're at the beach, the emotion of being at the beach with all of the senses that you're at the beach, your amygdala, that part in your brain that goes into fight or flight mode, or, you know, can sometimes keep us stuck if we're anxious or angry or having any sort of, you know, limiting emotion that we're stuck in. When we can tame that, it really does, you know, reset the mind. So there's a magic combination there of combining our senses with some uplifted emotions. And that's really where we get those really cool reset reactions mm-hmm. where the kids come out of it and they're like, wow, you know, they didn't, like, what happened? All of a sudden they feel better. They feel more relaxed. Mm-hmm. And it's because the amygdala does not speak in words. It speaks in sensory detail and emotion. So when we're speaking its language, we can really calm that central part of the brain that sometimes it gets heightened and prevents us from learning and being available.
So would this be a good time to bring up the document that both shared with me?
Yeah. And we can walk you through our little steps that we go through in the classroom.
All right.
And we've got some cool floor steps too. So we've got these little poly spots that we put on the floor that they can step on and go from, you know, the start to the reset and then to the I am memory and happy spot. You want to share a little bit about the floor?
Sure. So this slide really just shows like the outline of the steps. And like Kristen was saying, the actual spots, they're poly spots that you put on the floor. So each of these colored spots, the children would stand on, and there is a specific action that they are to do on each spot. So it really becomes a routine. And then once they learn it, they know what to do. So at our start spot, a lot of the therapists really love this spot because it gives them a time to just notice how they're feeling. And like, it sounds so simple, but kids go 100 miles an hour and sometimes they don't ever take a minute to stop and notice how they're feeling. And also, how does that feel in your body and mind? So, you know, if you're feeling anxious, like, how does that feel in your body? And are you taking shallow breaths? Are you feeling shaky? You know, if you're angry, do you feel hot? So they'll kind of notice the connections. Mm-hmm. And that also gives them the chance to kind of realize like, maybe I need to take a deep breath. So, and it, you know, down the line, it helps them to, you know when they need to reset, take a break, you know, before it gets too far. So we have actual movements and verbalizations here with each of the steps. And the reason why is because we're incorporating all of the learning modalities so that we're fully engaging our entire brain, because that's another piece that sometimes other practices can miss, and that it makes it less effective and less engaging because part of your brain is still off doing something else. So we are capturing the whole brain, focusing mm-hmm. it on this activity so that we're really maximizing the opportunity. So if they're in need of a reset, they can say, stop, I'm ready to move on. So if they're feeling angry, they can decide, you know what, I'm going to feel angry. I feel this. I notice it. One thing I want to mention is we're not running from the emotion, because we're accepting it and noticing, hey, I'm feeling this way. We have kids that can stay here for a few minutes. They can, you know, really emote and let it out. And when they're ready to move on, they can step away. So they can say, stop, I'm ready to move on. They hit the reset spot now. And if they really do need a reset, this is where they make the choice to do that. So I won't go through like everything they do on each spot.
Right.
But yeah. So then there's the opportunity to reset. If they're feeling good, they can choose to hold on to that feeling. So it's really just a point to stop and recognize, right? And see like, hey, am I in a good spot, or do I need to maybe make a shift? The I am is, those are affirmations that the kids come up with on their own. They're customized. And the neat thing here is we really try to encourage, you know, growth mindset inspired I am statements. Right. So it's, you know,
In the classroom too, I do a lot of like hands up too for affirmations. So kids will throw their hands, tell them, you know, like, put your hands up and let it sink in. Like, let that feeling, that thought that you have, that good feeling that you have, let it just, you know, literally flow into your body. Imagine, you know, if it's I am strong, or I am a leader, or I am capable, or I'm creative,
how does
whatever
it
is. Yeah. And so it's so cute to see all these kids with, you know, some are sitting and some are standing, but they got their arms up and they're reaching up so high and they're just like, I am. And then we like let it out, you know, I'm like, say it and say it louder and say it louder. And they're like shouting and they think it's fun. And they all are saying different words, mm-hmm. you know, and my ear hears like, oh, I think I heard this. I heard this. And so the kids have a great time there, but the memory and the happy spot are probably, I always say, where all the magic happens. Mm-hmm. And even for my own kid, yep. Even for my own daughter at home, I have a 7-year-old in first grade. And I think she's really good at the memory and the happy spot, especially when we're in meltdown mode, which is always, of course, at bedtime. But it's a great way to get her out of whatever funk she's feeling, you know, when she's in her upset mode, because it gives that brain an opportunity to go somewhere. And when we all think about some of our favorite memories, if you just sat and thought about one of your favorite memories ever,
mm-hmm. You really get into it.
You really got into it and you really thought about like, well, what does that feel like to be in that memory? You know, how does it, what am I hearing when I'm there? Is there, did I taste anything? What did my hands feel or my feet, you know, bringing in those sentences, we draw it all in. And if you sat in a memory for even 5 minutes, you would automatically yourself feel so much better. Mm-hmm. And I do these exercises with my kids too, because there are moments in a day as teachers where we're all like, okay, I think I've had enough for today. And I think I need to reset myself. And I mean, it's like the magic, you know, mm-hmm. if I just go there and for me, I have a memory that I reflect on it. It just, it's the same one. When I close mm-hmm. my eyes, I go to the same place. And it doesn't matter how many times I've gone there, because if I go there and I think about it, it's like, I'm smiling. I'm good.
It's, you know, your brain, because your brain has those, you know, we all know there's, we have those connections in our mind. So it's like, if we're stuck in a place that's yep. keeping us
stuck,
and we make a shift and we start thinking about something that our brain has already connected to be a positive event, connected to positive emotions, you start to travel down those neural pathways and different emotions come in and like they automatically activate. So our brain is very much like a, you know, a muscle and a machine where it's like, you know, it can be stuck and stalled. And, you know, that memory spot is from a neuroscientific perspective, there is a reason for it because it helps the kids to travel down a different pathway in their brain connected to positive emotion. So that's where they make that shift. And it's fun because it's very customized and they get to go somewhere that's special to them that, you know, other people might not understand, but, you know, they can visit that and they, you know, really hone in and bring in their senses and relive that memory. And that's how, that's where the shift really happens. And it seems so simple, but it's very profound.
So the happy spot too, our last one, we have these visualization chips that are, they come in these little bags that are part of our kits and our little vision chips. I will go around and I've done it two ways. Again, you know, with the classroom teaching, you have to figure out what works best for your classroom. So sometimes I've allowed the kids to dig in their hands and find one. And, you know, it's kind of like you get what you get and you don't throw a fit kind of thing.
Right.
Yep. You got your chip. Hold on to it. Take a peek at it and kind of draw through the senses again. And sometimes I've like strategically stuck my hand in the bag and grab a whole bunch. And as I go around the room, I think about what that particular child might enjoy seeing on a chip. And so yesterday when I did it that way. The other day when I did it, I let them choose. But yesterday when I was giving students certain chips that I thought maybe that they would enjoy, then I heard some good feedback on the like, ooh, that's a good one, you know? And so it's like, ooh, that's so cool.
Yes.
And, you know, like one of the happy spots might be imagine you're a dolphin swimming in the ocean. And so they've got to, you know, go through their senses and think about that one. And at the end of the practice yesterday, many of the kids were just like, I'd really like to be a dolphin, you know, it just is. It's so great to just see they're no longer upset about whatever, all of a sudden we're thinking about being a dolphin in the ocean and we're going with it. Yeah, we're talking about
refreshed,
it.
Refreshed, like, oh, they're how cool engaged, would it be? Motivated.
Yep.
And there's a sense of community that comes together too. Like, and if you're doing it in a classroom setting, yeah, it really is like flipping a switch. So
that was it.
That's how we gamify it and make it really engaging for kids is those vision chips, you know, they dig them and it's, you know, there's no reliance on technology or anything like that, but they really can, it's kind of like reading a book and then you watching the movie, mm-hmm. like what you come up with in your own mind is always better than mm-hmm. the movie. Right. So right. that's kind of like what we do with these vision chips and like, you know, the kids kind of take themselves on a journey and they realize, you know, the power of their own mind and they end up in a much better place.
And I really love with your start. And so if I look over to my side here, it's because I have it up still on my other screen. Mm-hmm. And I am a master IEP coach and basically I'm an advocate. And when I go into some of these schools and I see these IEPs and how they're written for some of the students, and I'll ask questions like, well, does the student know that their body is feeling anxious? Like, do they know their triggers? Like, do they not triggers? Do they know the signs that their body is giving them? And they're like, well, I don't know. I'm sure they do. Of course they do. And I try to get them to understand that you may have to work with a student because they may not know that twiddling their hair or, you know, tapping their fingers on the table or whatever. I mean, because there's a million of them.
Pencil tapping.
Yeah. I mean, there's like I said, there's so many things. And when I've tried to get some schools to work with the student and teach the student to recognize those things, they look at me like I have two heads. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what that person's things are that are going to show them that they have anxiety. Well, if you watch that person just for a little bit, you're going to see it.
And encourage them to reflect. I mean, I can say even as an adult, I would get knots in my stomach when I would start to get like overly anxious. And I connected it to being like, oh, something exciting is going to happen instead of I'm anxious and I need to take a break. So I kept pushing and making my anxiety worse. So it's like kids are the same way. Like we need to recognize those cues when our body's telling us, let's do a reset or let's do something to calm down, to take a break. Because otherwise we just kind of amp ourselves up even more.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And most of what I've heard you say and how you've described it has been in a whole class setting. There are some verbal components to it. So does this work with kids who don't have the verbal skills?
Absolutely. And that's what makes it customizable because really, like I said, the magic is in the, you know, the sensory details and pulling up emotion. So you can really customize it to the point that, you know, if the verbalization isn't appropriate, you don't use it. If the movement isn't appropriate, you don't use it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really just, you know, we use as many aspects of the brain as we possibly can to keep the child engaged and to make the brain very malleable. And, you know, that's really it. So it's, and I think a lot of kids are used to, you know, doing that sensory work. We do a lot of sensory work with our kids at school and at home and they enjoy it. So they're kind of familiar with that. So as long as we're doing that, you know, we'll be able to take them to a better place. They'll be able to take themselves to a better place, even better.
Yeah.
Right. Sure. And so you said this was about a year and a half ago that this sort of came to the both of you. Why do you think it's being a bigger issue now than what it was? Or is it that it's always been a big issue and we've just not addressed it?
Maybe a little bit of both. I think it's always been a big issue and we haven't addressed it. And then what we're doing now, we have, you know, this, it's wonderful that we have this big focus on social emotional learning and attending to our emotional well-being in the classroom. But the foundational knowledge it's needed because you need the foundational knowledge to, you know, it's like a hook to hang the next step on. it's that next step that the kids are, you know, really owning something that they can help themselves with that's kind of missing. So it's, you know, there's definitely an ongoing problem.
I do, from the classroom, you know, teacher perspective, I do see that the social emotional, you know, learning needs have risen. IEPs have gone up. We have more and more kids being identified, more and more kids with ADD, more and more kids with ADHD, more and more kids that are just not available for learning in the classroom. And, you know, unfortunately, with all of just the stressors that students are exhibiting in their own lives that we might not even know about, whether they're having issues at home. You know, we're seeing such a drastic increase in gaming. And, you know, there's been a lot of research on how gaming affects our brains and, you know, the rise in ADD and ADHD mm-hmm. with the gaming. And, you know, that. Were not things so much, you know, 20 years ago, you know, we didn't see as much of it. Not that those things might not have been there. It was just harder to see some of those things. But definitely because of certain things in our, you know, global environments, the rise of the needs of students, I do feel personally that that's gone up. And, you know, when I have a classroom of 23 students and at this point have somewhere anywhere between 7 to 9 that have some pretty intense needs, that's a very large number.
Yes, it is.
And even when I started in the profession, which was 18 years ago, it was always like 2 or 3. Mm-hmm. And so we've gone from 2 or 3 to 7, 8, 9, maybe in a classroom of 24, 5 IEPs, 6 IEPs.
Right.
You know, it's, we're not trending in the right direction.
Right. Right. Exactly.
So, you know, kids aren't kids anymore, and we've gotten away from that.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say something.
No, that was just my thought. Just that I feel like our kids have gotten away from allowing kids to even be kids and promoting life as a child. It's like all these kids have so much to worry about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and things they shouldn't be worrying about. Because you're 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 or 12. And it's like, those shouldn't be things you need to think about right now. Just be a kid.
Right. Exactly.
Come to school and have fun learning. Let us teach you. But the let us teach you part is what's becoming really hard because they just are not available for the learning part.
Right. And so with this program that you've developed, what ages is it for? Does it have a max age or kind of a cap out age?
So typically we recommend 7, and then the end range, we can say 17 just because of the developmental appropriateness that we've made it for. But to be totally honest, I will do happy spots at the end of a long day when I feel like I am so stressed and I can't even go to bed, but I'm exhausted. Like, I will pull out the happy spots and it works like a charm, but we've made it kid friendly so that it's fun for them. So,
yeah. Because of the visuals, you know, the way the poly spots look, or if I put something up on the board, just the way, you know, we have developed even, you know, like anything for the technology side of things, if teachers wanted to put the spots up on the board. Mm-hmm. So just the way it all looks is colorful and
fun
and kid friendly. And we've even developed different spots for the older kids because the ones that, you know, we've shown you are a little bit more for like the elementary level. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I do. I do think that probably the grades that could benefit best is you're going to start at like probably first grade.
Okay.
Kindergarten might be a little bit of a stretch, yeah. especially because we do have student journals too that we use in the classroom. And our student journals are very reflective. Mm-hmm. It does have the option to write or draw. So they, you know, depending on like needs, because not everybody likes to write, not everybody likes to draw. So when I designed the student journals, I designed them with that thought in mind that like, oh, well, not everybody's going to be able to like, you know, just write their ideas. So there's a lot of word banks, fill in the blanks, you know, the way that it was structured. It was almost like from my learnings of being a teacher and learning how to even accommodate for my IEP friends who might need sentence starters and word banks. And so that's really how I tried to design it, because a lot of the accommodations too that we make for our IEP students, it's like everybody could kind of benefit from those.
Yeah, so very true.
Yeah, I think a lot of people could actually benefit from these accommodations. So
absolutely.
That's kind of how the journal ended up getting designed. But I really do think then it would need to start in first grade, because you've got kindergartners who come in, they can't read, they can't write sure. much beyond their name. Some don't even have letter recognition in kindergarten. So,
right.
Yeah.
So first grade we would say is probably the lowest, and then on up until, you know, until they graduate. And like I said, pull out those happy spots yeah. when you're 40 and you're feeling stressed, and it works like a charm.
That's awesome. So I've heard you mention it multiple times that you do these a lot in whole classroom settings. Mm-hmm. So yeah. let's say you have a teacher, or maybe you've had this experience where everybody else is pretty okay, but maybe there's one or two students. So do you do this then for everybody, or do you sort of go, hey, I'm just going to like pull these one or two students aside and just do this with them?
So I still do it both last year and this year. I've always done it whole class, because I've felt that even if we are in really good places and every day, and between last year and this year, I still have a handful of students that are amazing. They come to school happy and ready to go and ready to learn, and they're motivated and they're like angelic children. but they like it because it's like an extra boost in feel good, you know, it's like I said, especially where the magic happens and the memory and the happy spot, and just the idea of like, you know, standing and moving through our spots in the classroom and, you know, hands up and sunglasses on. And all of my students have been provided the journal that I created, and I do it a lot for our morning work. You know, they might do have like one other task that I give them. And I always say, when you're done, you know, take out your happy spots journal. The journals were meant to be, you know, you don't have to go in any specific order. It's not like you have to go page by page. I always say, open it up, find a page that resonates with you today. And so you don't have to be in like a funky place.
No. And then that way
to receive it.
We all know when we are in a bad place, it's not a good time to try to learn something new. So
no. Exactly.
You know, no matter who you are and you know what your needs are, it is hard for anybody to learn something new when you're in a bad place. So we try to help everyone learn their routine, so it's like second nature, so that they can do it as a routine and a practice to keep themselves on the up and up. But also then they have it, you know, in their pocket, and they know how to do it when they're in a bad spot and they need to reset. So that's something that, you know.
So good for all, for sure. But our friends that tend to be very emotional and ride the emotional roller coaster during the day, they may need it more than just one time in the morning. Mm-hmm. Or after lunch or after gym class.
Yeah.
You
so
know?
It could be used 10 minutes at the beginning of the day for the whole class. And then I know Kristen has a happy spots corner in her classroom where like, you know, if a child needs to visit more frequently, you could do that. And then we also have, you know, we can furnish therapists with the kids too. So if they're doing pullout therapy and they're needing to, you know, to help a student, to really reset, that's, you know, that's an opportunity too, if it's something that, you know, is outside of the classroom.
And so I'm guessing then that, because we did mention at the beginning that parents can use this in the home setting as well as teachers in the school setting. And so when you're doing it in a home setting, it's all the same steps. It's just more one or two kids at a time.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
Yep. And then what I did too is part of like my teacher manual that I had put together that has all the lessons. It's got like a bunch of reproducibles. It's got little chips that like once the kids learn each one, you could always copy and cut them out, give everybody one for like graduating from that step and knowing that step to the next. It also has parent communication letters. So a teacher could easily just copy it and send it home. So that way the teacher or the parent at home can see, hey, here's what my child is practicing in the classroom. And it, again, kind of similar to what you displayed on the shared screen. It lays out each spot and then it kind of guides the parent through like how to do it at home. By then, the students are really growing comfortable with it anyway. So it's almost like you probably would end up seeing the kids teaching the parents how to do it, you know?
And that's fun for them to be a leader and to take their parents on a journey and then their parents feel better afterwards.
I know.
We've heard that a lot where the parents just kind of go along for the ride. They think they're supporting their child and then they end and they're like, I feel better. Like that's empowering for the kids. So that's why, our company is Empowered Minds because it really is about empowering the child. And I always tell the kids that I work with is that like, this is just, you know, these are just like the materials to get you there, but they're doing the work. And that's really, important for them to realize. So that's the empowering part is that they are making the shift themselves.
I really appreciate that you just said that about, you know, that the kids will go and walk the parents through it, because that was going to be a question. Like, have you had any parents come up to you or say something to, now I'm guessing this is happening in more classes than just yours, Kristen, right?
Yes. Yeah. Right now I have like my entire third grade team is on board with me. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I was curious to know if like the parents would come up and be like, my kid's like different and like they're calmer and they do these certain things. And so I was really glad that you brought that out without me even having to ask, because I think it is something that the parents should be aware of that is going on in the classroom with their kids, because I think this can be beneficial to everybody. Stephanie, I feel like I'm a lot like you. I grew up with massive anxiety, special education teacher background, and I still have moments where I'm like, oh, okay, you know, and something helps me get through that moment because of different therapies that I've gone through and learned how to do for myself. We only have about 12 more minutes at a max. And so one of the questions that I have for you is when you're talking about the memory, do you help the kids to make sure that they understand what a memory is and like what a good memory would be compared to a bad memory? And like, how does that all kind of transpire?
Yeah. So part of the, you know, the like on the teacher end of it, when I made that manual, that specific lesson that kind of coaches the teacher to coach the kids, it talks about making like a memory web up on your board. And then we go through talking about, well, what are some of your favorite memories that you have ever had? And we talk about being really specific on like one aspect of a memory. So if your favorite memory was your birthday party, we're not going to focus on the entire time, you know, from the start of the birthday party to the end. We try, I teach them to narrow that memory down to one part of the birthday party that was your favorite. Most of the kids end up saying opening presents.
Yes. Because if you do the whole memory, it dilutes it, right? Then it's like a story and it gets kind of boring.
So then we can focus on just the opening of the presence and then draw in senses. And so then I will go through an example in class and say, okay, well, if we're going to talk about just opening presence, then tell me, what would you hear? And kids would always say, oh, crumpling of paper, the ripping sound of wrapping paper. And I say, do you know what that sounds like when you rip wrapping paper? And they're like, yeah. And they all try and make sound effects. So we go through that and, you know, well, does paper have a smell? And they're like, sometimes, you know, sometimes a lot of wrapping paper as it's coming, you get like the smell of paper. And so we have fun with it, you know, and I try and tell them like, well, what does that smell like? And, you know, they kind of laugh about it and they're like, well, I don't know how to explain it, but I just know what it smells like.
And that's what makes it accessible.
Because it's in your memory.
Yeah.
You know what it smells like.
Like a kid doesn't have to remember every moment of an entire day to utilize it. Like we can, you know, we coach them into honing in on one specific like moment and really getting into it. Because if we're talking about the entire birthday party, that can be frustrating for kids to recall and think of the details. And then they're not going to enjoy that. So, you know, just honing in on that moment, then when they're kind of trained to do it, it becomes, you know, much easier for them.
Yeah. So it's something that, you know, we specifically teach is how to go into one smaller part of a memory, because they will try and reach for something big. I went on a vacation.
And take you on the whole vacation.
Yeah. So now, now, which part of your vacation was it was the favorite. So you kind of have to like question kids to lead them down the path of like, okay, we're on a vacation. Well, which part was your vacation? Going to Disney World. Okay. Well, Disney World's really big, but which part was your favorite? And so we keep chipping away until we land on that one thing that really resonated or left that impact. And that's why they're remembering like that trip, because we got to that one point.
And that's fun for parents to do too. And sometimes they're surprised of like the favorite memory their kid will pick out. And they're like, wow, I learned something that like, I didn't even know my child enjoyed that much, whether it was a boat ride. And like, they'll give different examples that they had no idea that their kid has that in their mind as like a favorite memory. And so it was like, it's a moment of connection too. So it's really fun for, you know, outside of the classroom for parents to kind of walk through with the kids. And
it's safe, you know, it's a very safe exercise for so many kids, especially when we don't know what goes on at home. So
and if there's trauma, it could be something simple like eating your favorite food, right? It could be like eating a piece of pizza, you know,
or at the park. If school is your safe spot too, for some kids, which I tell them, like sometimes some of us love coming here so much, but like, what's your one favorite part about being here? Is it gym class, art class? Is it walking through our door each morning, you know, to the music we have in the room? So we can find something that makes everyone feel good, but it's safe. You know, it's just, it's such a safe practice that's uplifting when I feel like we have too many kids that need it now.
Yeah. Well, I'd want to make sure that I get your website address out there. It's been up on the screen, but for those that are just listening on the podcast, it is myhappyspots.com. So my happy spots is plural. So make sure you put that S on there. myhappyspots.com. And is there, that's where they would go. If anybody, a school district or an individual or a therapy clinic is wanting to get more information and pricing and all of that sort of stuff, right?
Correct.
It is correct. We are currently in the process too of like shifting around some things and getting, you know, some other services added into the website too, which is really exciting. So we have some new developments happening, you know, behind the scenes for our website. And, but there's definitely a contact us on the site. So anyone that's interested in having us come in and do trainings, we do offer trainings to whole schools. We come in and work with the staff and get teachers trained, and we leave our goods and goodies of our kits behind. And we've got like a teacher portal where people then have access to our creations too, for obviously copying and whatever needs they're going to want within their own schools, as well as do training with like social workers and psychologists. both in schools and even health centers too. So any kind of like even mental health centers for that work with youth. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome. This is a really great program that you two have developed. And I think it's really going to help a lot of children. I'm not in the classroom every day anymore, but I do sub. And like I said, as a master IEP coach, I see students on a regular basis that are struggling with a lot of the things that I think this program is going to help them be able to better deal with and understand. So we've got a few more minutes. So is there anything that you have not said that you wanted to be sure to mention today? I don't want to let you go without giving you that opportunity.
For me, I think it's just more a comment in general about meditation for kids, knowing that you can make it accessible for all kids because it is for everybody. And we just have to, you know, kind of pick and choose, like meeting a child where they're at and what they can access and what will be meaningful to them. But the benefits are so profound that we need to make sure that it is a part of every child's day because it has such an effect to calm their minds and to empower them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to see that there has definitely been an increase in schools that are using mindfulness or even meditation, whether it's in their therapy small groups or even in some of the, you know, actual general education classrooms. But I am starting to see more and more people understanding why it's been such a powerful practice for forever. I mean, this isn't a new practice. It's an ancient tool. But I'm glad to see that we have more and more classrooms that are utilizing it. But I just feel that what we have developed between the two of us is really what's going to be impactful in the classroom settings, given, you know, the routine and the structure and
it's
the same practice and yep. And they get it. So something a little different than just throwing on a video, you know, from YouTube or, you know, just another throwing on, a screen image. It really gets them going. So we've had good success. I'm happy.
Me too. This is our happy spot.
I know.
That's great. A perfect ending. That's wonderful. Thank you again.
Thank
Stephanie, my guests today have been Stephanie Cantu and Kristen Farah of Happy Spots. Make sure you check them out at myhappyspots.com and tune in next time for our next episode. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelley Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelley Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelley Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shelleykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shelleykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.